Does it feel like your life is full these days? Feels like mine is very full. Sometimes I feel like the fullness of a life. So connected with dukkha. Connected with dukkha. So I'm wanting to talk about the Buddha's the central teaching, the Four Noble Truths. And I know a lot of us have heard talks on the Four Noble Truths before. As I practice, I'm just learning that there is no end to refining my understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And I feel like I'm just starting to appreciate, just starting to grok what Joseph Goldstein meant when he said, and I'm paraphrasing, that the reason awakening happens in these four stages. That it happens in these four stages of stream entry, once returner, non-returner, full arahantship. The reason it happens is because the heart mind can't fully take in dukkha all at once, that first noble truth of dukkha. It just can't take it in all at once. So we do it little by little in these stages. And I feel like that's been true for me lately, of just starting to deepen, like, oh, this is dukkha. So the Four Noble Truths, they are a framework and a map that can be understood by the mind, and that's really important for us to start to engage at that level. That you'll see that the Buddha and his disciples, monastic and lay, really encourage us to directly experience the Four Noble Truths. And for some time, the Four Noble Truths for me felt very stark and cold, unfeeling, and really abstract. When I started diving into the suttas and like, what is this noble truth thing? What are the four noble truths? And actually starting to practice with them in my daily life, especially this third noble truth, the cessation of suffering, the cessation of dukkha, that it can be realized. And it really started to feel into that in my daily life. The four noble truths cease to be stark and cold. In fact, they feel like they're full of compassion, and because of that compassion, it feels warm to me. These Four Noble Truths feel very warm, not cold. And these Four Noble Truths in the suttas, they're talked about as beneficial, irrelevant to the fundamentals of the holy life. In our own way, we're all engaging with the holy life as we practice the Dhamma, take refuge as we did at the beginning in the Buddha Dhamma Sangha. It's said that the Four Noble Truths lead to disenchantment, to dispassion, to peace. And it's also said that the Four Noble Truths are teachings that are special to the Buddhas. Special to the Buddha. There was one characterization of the Four Noble Truths that really struck me that just paused. Because the simile and what it was pointing to, the simile that characterizes the Four Noble Truths was just really heartening. And it's a simile that's created by Sariputta. And maybe it's because it was created by Sariputta that I found it so heartening and warm. So Sariputta was one of the Buddha's foremost disciples. It's so interesting. I didn't know this. The Buddha likened Sariputta to a mother who brings forth. You know, just allow that to speak to you for a moment. Sariputta as a mother who brings forth. So he would connect with spiritual seekers. You can think of all of us as seekers. Yeah. That he trained or brought forth spiritual seekers into this stream entry experience, this first stage, or more like an opening and a flowing into this terrain of awakening where we actually touch into the experience of Nibbana for the first time. Sometimes it's described as the Dhamma eye opening, the supreme peace, non-agitation. So this is the simile that Sariputta dreamed up. And he was so compassionate, Sariputta. He was accused of certain things and obviously didn't lash out in any way. And he really supported his friends even on their deathbed. I shouldn't say even, especially because they were facing death. He would bring them out of the unwholesome into the wholesome. So this is the simile that Sariputta dreamed up. He says, friends. And you can imagine that he's speaking to us. Not only Sariputta, but the Buddha and all of our ancestors in the Dhamma are still speaking to us through the suttas. So Sariputta says, friends, just as the footprint of any living being that walks can be placed within an elephant's footprint, and so the elephant's footprint is declared chief of them because of its great size, so too all wholesome states can be included in the Four Noble Truths. All wholesome states can be included in the Four Noble Truths. So the Four Noble Truths as broad and expansive and deep enough to contain all of the wholesome. That when we're actually cultivating the Four Noble Truths, really starting to explore them in our daily lives, not as something that's esoteric and out there, and maybe eventually I'll experience this third noble truth, the cessation of dukkha, and maybe one day this path of the fourth noble truth leading to the cessation of dukkha, maybe I'll develop it. It's like, no, as we cultivate it here and now, in our daily lives, we are cultivating the wholesome. We're cultivating metta. We're cultivating truth and generosity and a heart that's ethically attuned and faith and joy, wisdom, equanimity, determination. And I wonder if the inverse is true, that as we cultivate metta, as we cultivate faith, that somehow we're indirectly cultivating our understanding of the Four Noble Truths. So relating to the Four Noble Truths as actually containing all wholesome states as the highest form, the activity of the wholesome, really changed my own attitude towards the Four Noble Truths. They ceased to be stark and cold and abstract. So this is what Sariputta continues to say in this teaching. And in this passage, I changed the translation from suffering to dukkha. I'm just using the Pali term. So Sariputta continues. He says, in what for? In what for? Question mark. In the noble truth of dukkha, in the noble truth of the origin of dukkha, in the noble truth of the cessation of dukkha, and in the noble truth of the way leading to the cessation of dukkha. So I've used this before, this image before. I'm going to bring it in again just because it means a lot to me and it feels true. I just love the image. So like a plant or the leaves and branches of a tree start to trope to the sunlight, trope towards that which is life-affirming and life-giving. As we practice with the Four Noble Truths, we trope to the wholesome of each of the Noble Truths through some basic action, through some basic movement of the heart. Well, with this first Noble Truth, that all phenomena are dukkha, the basic movement of the heart, the basic wholesome action that we're taking, we're starting to trope towards, is understanding dukkha. All phenomena, all experience, dukkha. We'll talk more about, well, what is dukkha? And this isn't an intellectual understanding of dukkha. This is like a in the heart, in the bones, in the marrow understanding that has moved from here, like down into the heart, down into the body. So the second noble truth, the origin of dukkha, i.e. craving, is to be abandoned, let go of. And that's the basic movement, that's the wholesome that we're starting to trope towards, that we're turning toward, abandoning craving. And this third noble truth, the cessation of dukkha, is to be realized, it's to be made real. It's one of the reasons I was playing with at the end of our meditation, just asking Sati to turn towards the heart, mind, and see, is craving present? Is it absent? And in that process, starting to get to know, like, oh, this is what a heart mind actually feels like when there's an absence of craving, when there's the heart mind is empty of the activity of greed, aversion, and delusion. And maybe you notice some of the qualities and characteristics within the heart mind. Maybe there was a sense of contentment or peace. Like just sitting in your bones at ease. There's just the heart at rest in the chest, not struggling with anything. Maybe you noticed if craving was present, there was some struggle going on, the tension in the heart, the tension in the body. It doesn't matter what you discover as you do this investigation. The whole point is just to bring mindfulness to the experience and actually allow mindfulness to teach our heart mind things about craving so that eventually the mind of its own volition through this learning process starts to let go of the activity of craving because it's not peaceful. So third noble truth, realizing the cessation of dukkha, cessation of craving. And then the fourth noble truth, the path leading to the end, the going out, the cessation of dukkha, and this is to be developed. And just by virtue of being here tonight, listening to the Dhamma, which is a form of study, right? We're developing the path. We're developing the Eightfold Path. It's said that wise view, the first factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, one of the conditions that supports wise view in arising is the voice of another. I like to think of this as the voice of another who is sharing Dhamma. It doesn't necessarily need to be a teacher. It can be the voice of the wind in the trees, reminding us of the impermanent nature of this fluid universe that we live in. Could be a relationship that has some tension in it, reminding us of, oh yeah, dukkha. So all four noble truths revolve around this experience, this truth of dukkha that's translated as suffering. The word dukkha does contain this meaning, suffering. Now, before the Buddha's teaching of the Four Noble Truths, the word dukkha simply meant pain or painful. So when the Buddha comes around, he takes this word, dukkha, and expands its meaning, imbues it with additional meaning. So yes, the dukkha is pointing to that which is painful, that which is suffering, and it can be quite a wide range, right? It can be just a minor mental irritation of our experiences. To mental anguish. It can be a minor physical discomfort to physical agony. Quite a range of intensity. And then this word dukkha has additional flavors in it besides suffering. This word dukkha is pointing to experiences that are vulnerable to disintegration, disharmony, falling apart, being worn away. As I age and I get older, I'm like, oh, this is time, use, wear and tear of the body, wearing away at the body. And I was just wondering, like, how many heartbeats has this heart been beating since my first breath? Like it's a muscle that is being worn away through time, through use. This is the dukkha that's being pointed to, wearing away, falling apart, disintegration, disharmony. So just for a moment, are there aspects of your life, just allow your mind to really roam over your life, recent events, maybe events from 20 years ago, see where the heart mind goes or the attention goes. Are there aspects of your life that are vulnerable to disintegration, to being worn away, to falling apart, to disharmony? Reflecting in this way, we're coming to understand dukkha in a visceral vulnerable to disintegration, falling apart, being worn away, vulnerable to disharmony. I was recently with a group of people that I have a deep respect for, a lot of admiration for, and despite our best intentions, there was so much pain in how we were relating to each other. So relationships, friendships, vulnerable to disharmony, felt it very directly. Felt the disharmony in my body. Could see the disharmony manifesting in people's language and body language. Now for the second reflection. Are there things in the present moment that you're directly experiencing that are vulnerable to disintegration, falling apart, disharmony being worn away? Dukkha is pointing to this aspect of our lives. And we can practice with this. This isn't theory. We can actually bring sati along to like, well, what is this dukkha? How is it showing up in my experience right now? There's the suffering, pain part. There's that which is vulnerable to being worn away. Disintegration. We can also start to turn towards that which is unsatisfactory. So dukkha is also pointing to all experiences, every sight, every smell, every sound, every taste, every heart-mind state. It doesn't completely satiate. Doesn't completely satisfy, fulfill, meet our need. Doesn't meet the what Gil Fronsdale calls the deep biological imperative for peace, the deep biological imperative for freedom. That's operating in us. And lovely sights and beautiful heart-mind states don't completely satisfy this need that we have, this biological imperative for freedom. And that's okay. We get tripped up by saying it's not okay. But that's the response of the unawakened heart. And that's okay. So I want to turn to this first noble truth. All experiences are unsatisfactory, unreliable, ungovernable, unpredictable. I think what immediately comes to mind is the global pandemic that we are still living through. I was on the phone with my friend the other night and she said, Dawn, I want to meet you. And I thought she was going to say like at some point in the future. And she said, I just want to meet you in February of 2020. It took me a while, and then when I got it, I just laughed because I got it. It's just like, oh yeah, this pandemic. Unreliable, unpredictable, ungovernable, unsatisfactory. I feel like that's an understatement. Total understatement. I remember last summer, or last spring. Here in the US, at least, we got our vaccine. And we were so, for some of us, not all of us, but some of us were really excited. Summer's coming. We'll be able to go outside and social distance, go see our families, spend some time with friends, maybe go eat outside at a restaurant. And then Delta hit. Unpredictable, ungovernable. All these experiences, a global level, at the individual level, world events, everything that's coming in through the six sense gates, not satisfactory, unreliable. And this is because of their changing nature, this influx, shifting, inconstant, impermanent, changing nature of things. So the truth of dukkha, the truth of things as disintegrating, falling apart, vulnerable to that. And actually feeling into the, it may be that something hasn't quite fallen apart yet. I'm just looking at this lemon here. But there's the potential for it to disintegrate. If I leave it here long enough, and there's a little basket. But just being aware of the potential of it. Dukkha. So this truth of dukkha comes directly out of the truth of impermanence. I really am enjoying Temple Smith's recent, just how he's talking about impermanence these days, and he's talking about it in terms of living in a fluid universe. Love that. So the commentaries talk about three types of dukkha. There's dukkha dukkha, viparinama dukkha, and sankhara dukkha, and all three of these types of dukkha come out of this fluid, influx, shifting universe that we live in, that we are. So dukkha dukkha, the pain of pain, the pain of the unpleasant. And Joseph Goldstein talks about it in this way. He says, the dukkha of experiences that are painful in themselves. This is where the translation of dukkha as suffering most frequently applies. There's the obvious suffering caused by violence, natural disasters, political and social oppression, injustice. There's the inevitable pain of the body, the optional but deeply conditioned suffering of the mind, fear, jealousy, anger, anxiety. The inevitable pain of the body. A couple of weeks ago, and this only lasted for a night, the body started to migraine. I say the body because we think of migraines being concentrated in the head, and they are, that's true. But sometimes you can feel them starting to, like the epicenter of a migraine might start, for me, it starts in my back or around right underneath the shoulder blade. You can feel these prodromes ahead of time. In different parts of the body. So the body was started to migraine. It wasn't a full-blown migraine. And at that moment, there wasn't a lot of mindfulness because I was really tired. But there was like a modicum of mindfulness and some connection to the teachings. And I attribute this to the fact that I was teaching. I was in a retreat teaching. And there wasn't a lot of awareness around my relationship to the migraine or the body starting to migraine. The mind just started to proliferate for the worse, like projecting all my fears into what was going to happen the next day, what the next day was going to be like. And then I remembered just this particular teaching that the Buddha offered. And again, the Buddha is still talking to us. He was called the kinsman of the sun. I love this image, the kinsman of the sun. It's as if the radiance of his wisdom and compassion is still shining forth, blessing us through space and through time. Like just letting us know, like, this is how I did it. This is how Sariputta did it. This is how I supported Ananda. This is how Upalavana awakened, and this is possible for you too. Still speaking to us. So this is the teaching that came in from the Buddha. As the body was migraining and I was proliferating. And it said, when you think bhikkhus, and bhikkhus is just any dedicated practitioner. When you think bhikkhus, think this is dukkha. When you think practitioners, think this is dukkha. This is so simple and so profound. When you think, you should think, this is dukkha. Not all that proliferation, but this is dukkha, the pain of pain. when we're experiencing the pain of pain, how often do we actually let go of our reactivity or just shift our attention or start to shift our attention away from our reactivity and just connect with the pain of pain as pain of pain, as dukkha? This is dukkha. When you think, you should think, this is dukkha. So this influx, fluid nature of life gives rise to the second kind of dukkha, viparinama dukkha. And this is talked about as the stress experienced due to alteration of the unreliable nature of things, the alternation between that which we deem as pleasant and pleasurable and that which is that we deem as unpleasant, unpleasurable. And this becomes really obvious through pleasant experiences that we prefer to have, that we're wanting to obtain, that are wished for. Because when we experience some joy, if mindfulness is not there, we actually start to cling just because we want it to last. It's such an innocent movement of the heart. But it doesn't last, it changes. And during that change, we experience this viparinama dukkha, or even when it hasn't fully shifted, and we're right there in the middle of some pleasant experience, there can be a very subtle fear. It can almost or fear. It could be fear. It could be a subtle like discomfort. Sometimes for me, it feels like a shard of glass in the heart. Doesn't allow me to be fully present to the experience because I'm waiting for it to, I know it's going to pass. And there's resistance to that. There's this discomfort in the heart. That shard, that pain in the heart is our reactivity to the truth of alteration. Viparinama dukkha. Then there's sankhara dukkha. Sometimes it's talked about as the burdensome nature of conditioned experience or the weariness of existence. And sankhara dukkha became really clear for me when I was taking care of my aunt as she was dying. I know I talk a lot about my Auntie B. She gave me so much. She gave me so much, especially in her dying, the dying process. And I know that can seem like an odd way of framing someone's dying and death, but there were so many gifts that she gave in her dying, and one of them was this direct experience of sankhara dukkha. It became so clear, like, there is all this effort needed to keep just one life going, let alone my own and hers, and trying to support my mother as well throughout the experience. All the things that you need to do to keep a life going, a home functioning. It was my own life at that time, my own relationships, work life. I was working at Spirit Rock in the family program. I just started this teacher training, and my mother and I were doing our best to ensure that my aunt was feeling some level of comfort, taking her to her doctor's appointments, cleaning her home. I get to the end of the day and I'd be like, you mean I gotta do all of this over? Tomorrow I have to do all of this again? It's just like, the feeling was, stop the world, I want to get off. Stop the world, I want to get off. And when when that feeling arises, again, we're feeling into the truth of the fluid nature of life that results in disorder, disintegration. When things aren't tended to, they fall apart. They fall into disrepair. A very simple examples and experiences of this. Like, believe it or not, I did wash the dishes this morning, but if I took you over to this little kitchenette, ton of dishes in there now. All the effort that's needed to keep things in order. This is sankhara dukkha. And an unawakened heart experiences this as stressful, even painful. So things are inherently unsatisfactory, unreliable, beyond our control. And through our wish for things to be otherwise, we meet the truths of dukkha with more dukkha, the dukkha of our reactivity, of our stress, of burying our head in the sand, pretending we're okay. Lately, I've been having family members who say, like, it is what it is. And you can feel underneath that feels like a faux okayness with things. But underneath that is a lot of resistance to just the inherent dukkha of life. And this reactivity to dukkha, the Buddha said that we could be free of this, and he not only did he say it, he lived it. The Buddha, like, he would get backaches, the pain, the pain of having a body, the unreliable nature of things. We will experience dukkha, the pain of pain, whether we're an arahant or we're just embarking on this path. We will experience the unsatisfactory nature of things, but our reactivity to all of that, that's optional dukkha. And sometimes there are moments where it doesn't feel so optional to me. The conditioning of reactivity just comes in so quick, and it's like, this doesn't feel optional. But then there are moments of grace where I'm like, this does not actually, this reactivity is not inherent in this experience. Like when it falls away, you just get to, you see the truth of the dukkha that's inherent in life, that every human heart, every body experiences. Feels like more these days I'm learning how to breathe with dukkha instead of run away from dukkha. So we've talked about the wholesome troping of the heart. The heart troping towards some wholesome action related to each noble truth. So with this first noble truth, we're learning how to understand dukkha. And I just love how the scholar Rupert Gethin names it. He just calls it. This is what he says. Understanding the first noble truth involves not so much the revelation that dukkha exists as the realization of what dukkha is. Because we don't always recognize. As I was saying, with that migraine started to proliferate. Understanding the first noble truth involves not so much the revelation that dukkha exists as the realization of what dukkha is. Not revelation, but realization of what it is. So can we let go of our reactivity to the inherent dukkha of life? Can we let go of our reactivity through having a direct, honest encounter with dukkha? To me, it feels like we're learning through, especially this first noble truth, we're learning how to be with the purity of dukkha. And that experience ripens our heart, helps to mature the heart, so that it can prepare for this second action of abandoning craving. And what I've noticed, what's been helping me in just being with the purity of dukkha is breathing with dukkha. Just breathing. Sometimes before I can even call in compassion, just a vision of freedom from dukkha, that's joyous, that helps us get really close to dukkha so that can be understood. Sometimes before I can even call in compassion, I just need to breathe with dukkha as it is. When that migraine started to hit a couple of weeks ago, there was all, as I said, there was all this proliferation. I didn't do this. I should have done that. I was going to be in so much pain the next day, and I had all these things to do, and how could I complete all these things while being in so much pain? So there was all this reactivity. And then that teaching, when you think, you should think, this is dukkha. And it really was a moment of grace. I wasn't trying to call up that teaching, it just arose within the heart mind. And when it arose, it was like, let all that mess go, let all of that proliferation go, Dawn. Just let it go. And this is the truth, the purity of dukkha, to just breathe with the dukkha. And I was just there with the direct experience of the pain. Breathing with the dukkha, the pain of pain. And it was just painful. In other words, there wasn't all that proliferation and all that reactivity and bracing against the migraine that was starting to kind of bloom in the, it doesn't feel like blooming, it feels like a spear. Moving through the body. There wasn't the bracing against it. Can we actually learn to be with just the purity of dukkha, the pain of pain, the unreliable nature, the fact that things tend towards disintegration and being worn away and falling apart? And sometimes just being with the reactivity, being with the not the reactivity, being with the purity of dukkha actually entails allowing us to be with the reactivity towards the dukkha and actually allow it to play out in the broad field of mindfulness, the broad field of sati. Just sati, just knowing the dukkha itself, the dukkha of the, in this case, the migraine, and the reactivity towards the migraine, the resistance to the dukkha, all that heart's reactivity. And sometimes in those moments, it feels like true compassion can actually start to arise. And I say true compassion, that we explored this, I think we explored this the last time I was here when we were talking about the Brahma Viharas and the need to call up and call on the Brahma Viharas during this period where there's just so much chaos afoot in the world right now. I think I brought this up during that time when the last time we were together. And true compassion can arise. Because sometimes we use the faux compassion, like the inevitable dukkha of life will hit, right? Some pleasant experience comes to an end, a relationship, a job, and we'll try to bring in this faux compassion to try to fix the situation or change it. And that's not compassion. That's aversion to dukkha parading as compassion. A true compassion, having, is actually comes out of having a direct, honest encounter with dukkha, recognizing dukkha for what it is, and breathing. This is just the pain of pain, sweetie pie. This is just the pain of pain. This is just the pain of a migraine. Totally intense. Or the beginnings of a migraine. Totally intense. It's just the bare experience of dukkha as dukkha and recognizing that's what it is. Recognizing that this is dukkha. There are three more noble truths. We only got through one. Well, as Sariputta said, all of the wholesome is contained in the Four Noble Truths. They're broad, expansive, and deep. So I should have known to break up this talk. just concentrate on one noble truth at a time. So perhaps when we get together again as friends in the Dharma connecting, we'll have a chance to explore the second and third and fourth noble truths.